Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Deborah Becker. On this President's Day holiday, as we consider the current and past leaders of America, we want to ask this question. What makes an effective leader? Is it vision? Is it results? Is it charisma? We want to take some time today looking at leadership lessons that we might take from those in charge of the country or from other well-known leaders, say Bill Belichick of the Patriots, Abigail Johnson of Fidelity Investments. We want to look at them and talk about how leadership has changed over time and how it appears to be changing right now. Joining us to talk about this is Bill Aulette. He's Managing Director of the Martin Trust Center for MIT Entrepreneurship. He's also a professor at the MIT Sloan School of Management. Welcome to Radio Boston.
Thank you, Debbie.
Also, we're joined by Robin Chase. She's co-founder and former CEO of Zipcar. She's also author of Peers, Inc., How People and Platforms Are Inventing the Collaborative Economy and Reinventing Capitalism. Welcome back.
Hello.
So we also want to tell our listeners that we'd like to hear from you as well. And if you have a question for one of our guests, give us a call at 800-423-8255. What do you look for in leadership? Are you a leader? And what traits do you think are most important? During the Me Too movement, are you seeing changes or do you think leadership should change? Again, our phone number, 800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. You can also send us a tweet at Radio Boston. So, Bill, I want to start with you. What do you see ultimately as the job of a leader?
Well, the job of a leader is to produce results. And, you know, when you're talking about Bill Belichick, it's winning. And but in business and entrepreneurship, leadership is about getting followers as well. And often people talk about leadership and they mix in management, and I think it's important to differentiate the two.
So explain. Wouldn't manager be the person getting results and the leader being above that and looking at the bigger picture?
Well, you actually need both. And if leadership is you know, doing the right job and management is doing the job right, as Peter Drucker said. And so I think that often these two things get mixed up, and but it's important to have both of them. But leadership is more about creating followers. It's more about creating passion. It's more about dealing with change, whereas management is really about optimizing systems.
Okay. And how about you, Robin? What do you say in terms of dealing with leaders and defining a good leader?
I think leaders do have to have a great vision, and they have to surround themselves with excellence and let those people execute. And there's also a huge piece of listening. So you share a vision, and then you're constantly listening to see how that plays out and modulating that vision.
I want to ask you about whether we're seeing changes in what's needed in a leader right now, not only because of the political movement that we're at, but also the cultural moment that we're at. I mean, we're seeing a lot of upheaval right now, both politically and culturally. And what does that mean for leaders? Does it really change anything or not? Bill?
Absolutely. I mean, I think today leadership has to be seen in a different light. In the past, it was seen as a leadership as a mercurial individualist, whereas today leadership is a capability of an organization. This is that the MIT Leadership Center has studied this, and they see that, you know, to produce results, it's not just one individual, but you have to have a capability in an organization. And as the world gets more complex, it's important to have that team. And then the second part of that is with the rapidity of things changing, leadership is about dealing with change. And as change comes more and more rapidly, you can't just stay in management mode. You have to actually be in leadership mode more often. So leadership becomes even more important. So as times are changing, you have to be able to be a team player here. And you also have to be able to go back and forth between management and leadership much more rapidly.
And Robin, I'd like to ask you the same question.
It's interesting. You're also making me think about the idea that when you said charismatic, I think we've always discussed two types of leaders, one that we think of as charismatic and others who kind of lead from behind. But if I think of today's world, being able to be great communicators and to be able to make use of all the different ways that we communicate seems like a key part of good leadership today. Mm-hmm. And I'm also thinking a lot about, when you say what kinds of leaders, I'm wondering this out loud, when we think of white males, They come with a lot of baggage right at this moment. Mm. And I think it is a really prime time for people who don't have that baggage to be stepping up and to be having more those kinds of leaders. So we just don't have to constantly be second-guessing what is going on behind. Mm.
Who's an inspiring leader? Can you name one? Bill?
Abraham Lincoln, to me, is absolutely an inspiring leader. Mm. I was interesting this morning when I was working out, getting ready to come down here, is they had a panel, and I think all nine of them named Abraham Lincoln as the greatest president ever. Some other people threw Washington in, and they threw other people, but every single one said Abraham Lincoln. Mm. And so when you look about him, and I think Robin mentioned, a leader has to get great people around him, and his team of rivals was fantastic, and his empathy to draw people together. I mean, to me, one of the great leadership stories of all time is, you know, when Robert E. Lee surrendered to Ulysses S. Grant, Abraham Lincoln wasn't there, but he had over his values overhung the entire thing. So usually when someone surrenders to another one after 500,000 people have been killed in the Civil War, they would string that person up right away. Mm-hmm. But Ulysses S. Grant allowed him to keep his dignity, allowed him to keep his guns, saluted, in fact, Robert E. Lee. And that was all the values that Abraham Lincoln had. He said malice towards none and charity towards all in his second inaugural speech.
Mm. Robin, to you, who's an inspiring leader?
A colleague of mine, Christiana Figueres, she ran the UNFCCC that brought together the Paris Agreement. Mm. And when she took over that role, it seemed totally impossible that we would ever get a worldwide agreement. And she brought 192 countries together. Mm-hmm. And she did it through unfailing optimism. She had a very strong vision, and she's made it seem like this preposterous thing really was possible. So she lived this incredible optimism. And she really treated people as equals. She brought she gave people power, and they could use their power. So she really had open-ended how this was going to happen, she left in open-ended way so people could really participate and adapt in their leadership goals. And I also just have to mention another young leader who is my daughter, Cameron Russell, who I've just been very admirous of, that when I watch her leadership is constantly to engage others and to shine light on others who have less power. And it's proving to be a very powerful way of lifting the voices of others and creating a much larger movement.
Your daughter's a model.
She's a model and an activist.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, great. I want to just make sure we get some time to get callers in here. We have Rama calling from Beverly. Rama, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you. Great discussion. And yay for Abraham Lincoln. And you probably all know about Nancy Kane's book, Forged in Crisis, Kane.
From Harvard Business School.
K-O-E-H-N. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Leaders, to me, are someone who can love you and inspire you, encourage you, even when times are tough. And obviously, Shackleton and Lincoln did that. But I look to, you mentioned Belichick, and people are always mentioning Bill Belichick. I'm sure he does that. But I look to leaders who love you when you're down, when things are down, and coaches and athletes who show good sportsmanship. That's, to me, that's leadership. Supporting my niece, Ava, she's 8 years of age. She has said that she's an upstander, not a bystander. She wants to be an upstander in her life, mm-hmm. fighting for those who aren't as privileged or aren't as lucky or fortunate. So I think fighting for, the underdog we always see the coaches and the players loving and kissing each other and hugging each other when they're winning, but how do they react when things are going a little bit tougher?
Okay, thanks. Rama, thanks so much. Let's let our guest sort of address that a little bit. I think that he brings up a good point here, motivating people even when things don't do well. But on the flip side of that, I want to ask both of you this question, too. How do you make sure that you can encourage people when there is difficulty and still motivate people and set standards that you need to set to achieve what you want to achieve without compromising those standards? I think that's a difficult line to walk as a leader.
One of the important things we have yet to say is that leaders need to be incredibly great role models. And so when I was leading Zipcar and it was a brand new idea, I made quite clear that none of us had ever done this before. And so who knew how to make it done well. And what was important is that if we made mistakes, which all of us did, we would own up to them and improve them. And I would role model that. So if I had done something wrong, I would say, oh, I did this thing. It was a really bad move. This is what I'm doing differently. And so I felt that it gave me the ability to praise my staff as I always did when they did great things. And when they did wrong, when they did made mistakes, we could call them out. And it was just a pattern of improvement and learning. But I felt that the role modeling was really a key piece to this. So if you want others to do it, you really have to demonstrate that you own up to your mistakes as well.
Hmm. What would you say, Bill?
I think Rama makes a really good point. I mean, I think that leadership is not just about winning. It's about having clear values that when you win, you're winning in a certain way. And you look at history where leaders implies followers. And people will follow people who have clear leadership, have clear values, I'm sorry. And so it's not just enough to win. And I remember some of it with Obama when they were talking about if we do this and if we succeed, is it worth it? And we're not going to do this because even if we win, we don't want to win that way.
Right.
And so I think that Rama brings up a good point is you have to have certain things that you believe in and you're willing to fight for those. And victory is not just measured by what's on the scoreboard. It's how you do it as well. And that's very important for a leader.
Right. I want to bring someone else into the conversation here who's thought about this a lot. And this is Victoria Budson. She's on the line right now from Florida. She's founder and executive director of the Women in Public Policy Program at the Harvard Kennedy School of Government. Welcome back to Radio Boston, Victoria.
My pleasure to be with you.
So just from a political perspective, what are you teaching future leaders at Harvard?
You know, I think it's a very interesting and important time for us to be looking at what does make a good leader and in the political realm. I agree very much with what Robin said about listening and what Bill talked about in terms of having an organization that has capacity and a team that can manage the complexity. When we think of what is required of political leaders today, in a global, ever-changing context, in addition to having a vision, to really have a vision where you invite others to see themselves within that vision, rather than any type of authoritarian leadership, a joined and significant image where people can find themselves and what's meaningful to themselves and their families and their community. And the second part, which is so important for political leaders, is really to be a steward of the institutions that enable that democracy. In addition to managing your own political career, perhaps the needs of your political party, whatever your social and political agenda are, you also have to be able to defend and support the use of the free press, to ensure that you have an independent judiciary, to be a steward of the system, and to not only be focused on what are the particular needs or wants of your own leadership narrative, of your own legacy, but to understand that the system itself, as well as the people you serve, must come before self in order to actually effectuate leadership in a way that will be meaningful.
We don't really seem to see a lot of that right now, quite honestly, Victoria. I wonder, but I just want to make sure that we get to some other points here before we run out of time. In the age of Me Too, I wonder what you, as someone who studied policy, what do you think about how leadership might be changing and how folks can balance that?
You know, what we see with the ability of people to use social media and to share their voices without having to have a major media outlet amplify, but to literally be able to create a groundswell where people can share experience and provide leadership that can start with a spark of someone sharing their voice on social media and then snowball. For example, when we had Monica Ramirez, who's one of my students, literally write the letter that the women farm workers shared publicly to the women of Hollywood and to say your experience, different by region, different perhaps by race, different perhaps by avocation, different by class, we share a similar experience. We are all in this together and we support you. And it's that ability to have grassroots leadership that is dramatically shifting how we understand what leadership is, who, in essence, has access to leadership. So we see the formal types of authority and informal types of authority can work in tandem, can work independently, but more people have avenues towards demonstrating their leadership. I also think, frankly, in the time period of Me Too, what we're going to see is that organizations will understand not only managing because it's the right thing to do or the moral or ethical thing to do, and obviously they need to avoid things like criminal behavior, but there will be an entire both risk management piece and understanding that you are not likely to be able to have people perpetrate inappropriate to criminal acts in your organization, and that you want to create an environment where people can do their best work. And being harassed or demeaned or belittled or exploited does not provide any company with a mechanism to compete in a global marketplace. And we're seeing really a whole weaving together of women having voice, of social media creating a platform, of people working across all kinds of different lines that they didn't cross in everyday ways historically. I think we have the capacity and the potential to really change how leadership is taking place in a way that will be very good.
All right. Victoria Budson, founder and executive director of the Women in Public Policy Program at Harvard's Kennedy School of Government. Thanks so much for being with us.
My pleasure. Thank you.
I want to make sure we get more callers in here as the clock keeps ticking. Mia is calling from Worcester. Mia, you're on the air.
Hi. Thank you for having me.
So what's a good leader, Mia?
So a few things. First, I think a good leader is someone who is willing to listen to not just any ideas, but a diverse range of ideas. You know, are they listening to every type of demographic out there? That sort of thing. I think another great quality a leader should have is knowing their strengths and weaknesses and really working on those weaknesses too. Knowing who they can work well with based on what your strengths and weaknesses are and what theirs are. And I guess that would sort of lead to, you know, bringing results that are for the many. I guess there's a quote, I think it's from Star Trek, the needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few. So I guess that's really helping take into consideration what the need is for the group and not just, you know, the few people in Congress or any sort of political situation.
All right. Well, thanks so much for the call. Let's ask our guests. Robin, I want to go to you. Listening, which you had brought up earlier about a quality of a good leader. Also, self-awareness being very important, knowing your strengths and your weaknesses. But I'm wondering, you know, this question I've heard asked before, but I would like to hear your thoughts. Is leadership an innate quality? Are you a born leader, you know, or, you know, could you really be trained to be one of the greats, the next Abraham Lincoln, or are you just born that way?
I don't think we are born leaders, but I think we can definitely all become leaders. And I think it really does come to this piece of being very sensitive to what you are good at and not good at, and this reliance on surrounding yourself with others to fill in those gaps. There's just one point I wanted to bring from the previous conversation that I thought was so interesting, is I think we have this new idea of collective leadership. Because one of the things I was going to say is that a good leader makes room for the participation of others, and then when other people contribute to good outcomes, that we recognize that contribution. And if we think of the Me Too movement, it is a movement and is a collective leadership. It's because of that huge number of voices that it's together this group is leading. And that's what we're seeing also with the school shooting that just happened today, happened a few days ago. And so this idea of collective leadership, where we are recognizing that it's the collection of individual small points of leadership that is creating this much larger wave forward.
Mm. Bill, are good leaders born or made?
They are not born. There's no genetic makeup. The MIT leadership studied these different characteristics and found out that, in fact, it can be developed over time, and it is developed over time. And it's personal, and it's contextual. And I think that's really important to understand. I want to just go back to the Me Too movement, too. I think there was a really good point there that it's not just about, like, you have to morally do this. This is actually very, very good for businesses as well. You know, a successful leader has a team that has a common vision, they have shared values, and they have complementary skills. And if you don't have that kind of respect for other people, you won't have the high-performance team, and you won't be able to compete against other people. And I think the other part in this era of today, there's enormous transparency with social media. Mm. The hypocrisy is called out. And today it's even more important for leaders to lead by example. You know, David Brooks, you know, leader about character matters.
Right.
This will be called out. And if you're a fake, it's easier to get called out today. And frankly, I think that's a very good thing.
Mm.
So I think that the point of that was brought up with the Me Too movement, I think it's, while it might hurt in the long term, it's good for everybody. Mm. It certainly is good for our businesses.
Just very briefly, because we're running out of time, but what about those leaders that we hear about who can produce amazing results, Steve Jobs, but they're not necessarily, at least based on what we read, they're kind of bullies. What do we do in cases like that?
Well, first of all, I mean, I think a lot of this gets overdone when you look at when you start analyzing the data set. Yes, there are statistical outliers like Steve Jobs, but you notice he wasn't successful early on. He was humbled in the middle of his career, and he came back, and he depended on people like Tim Cook and Johnny Ives to help him, and he understood that it isn't one person. And so you saw him evolve as a human being. But most of the time when you look at these things, you know, if you're a bully, you don't sustain it. You might be right, but you need to build this team because you can only do so much. If you're one person, you can only do so much.
Hmm.
So you have to get these followers, and you have to build that team as has been talked about so much.
Okay, last word, Robin. Recommendation to those future leaders out there, too, those kids going to Washington and planning these protests and sit-ins?
That's what I think I wanted to leave with, is that all of us can, and I think at this moment should be leaders. Some of us will be leaders of very large groups of people, but every single one of us is and should be a leader of our own peer group, and that we are role modeling the best values, and that when you don't role model those, you are a follower to other people's examples. And so it's time, really, a moment for all of us to be stepping up to our best selves and making our friends and colleagues and neighbors know what that best is.
All right. Robin Chase, co-founder and former CEO of Zipcar and author of the book Peers, Inc., How People and Platforms Are Inventing the Collaborative Economy and Reinventing Capitalism. Thanks for being with us, Robin.
You're welcome.
Also, Bill Aulet, managing director of the Martin Trust Center for MIT Entrepreneurship. He's also a professor at the MIT Sloan School of Management. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Deb.
Stay with us. There's more ahead. I'm Deborah Becker, and this is Radio Boston.